Chapter 16. What the fuck happened in 1971? We need to spend a little more time on this section. Nixon promised that coming off the gold standard wouldn't lead to the bugaboo of inflation. But now we know that it did. And that's not all. Two Bitcoiners, Ben Prentice, and pseudonyms Heavily Armed Clown, started a website called WTF Happened in 1971, and it tracks all the economic and social trends that started after Nixon started fucking with the money. None of them are good. Not for the average person, anyway. Here's a starting point. The economy continued to rise at the same pace, but wages instantly flatlined, barely budging since 1971. Money printing and inflation pumped up asset prices and business interests. But it didn't trickle down to everyone else. Income gains soared for the 95th percentile, but they're flat for the middle class and lower income families. Money printing is a hot air balloon for the wealthy, but a sinking ship for the average guy. Income inequality is now heading back to levels last seen in the 1930s. And guess where the tipping point is? Just after 1971. And about that bugaboo of inflation. Yeah, not so much. Between 1910 and 1971, cumulative inflation went up a steady 306%. In the 50 years since Nixon took us off the gold standard, 2,326%. House prices have soared. The cost of essential goods has soared. Education, medical costs, skyrocketed. And this isn't just America-centric. Nixon's move basically cut the cord between gold, the dollar, and all the global currencies anchored to the dollar. Fiat regimes exploded. And then came the currency crashes. There was a record spike of international currency devaluations, triggered almost immediately after 1971. And then there's debt. The US deficit is off the charts. In the 70 years leading up to 1971, the US accumulated less than $500 billion in debt. In the 500 years since, $27 trillion. And what about buying assets? For most of the 20th century, you could buy the S&P 500 with 31 hours of work. Today, it's 120 hours. Remember, as soon as you start thinking about inflation in terms of time, it gets pretty scary. The average household saving rate is down too. Decades of low interest rates have wiped out any incentive to save money. And then there's the indirect consequences. As equality got worse, the political system got more divided. The ideological position of Republicans and Democrats has got measurably wider since the 1960s and 70s. The number of 25 to 29-year-olds living with their parents is back at World War II levels. The tipping point is 1971, almost on the dot. Then there's the incarceration rate. It's off the charts since 1971. You can argue that correlation doesn't equal causation. And I agree, there are other factors at play in the jail system. But the trend here is pretty obvious. Abandoning the gold standard triggered money printing. Money printing leads to inflation. Inflation causes inequality. Inequality triggers social unrest. Anger and despondency in our communities lead to jail time. Young people are hit hard from fiat systems. Home price sets and asset prices are running away from them, while wages are stuck. So they're delaying marriage. The American family unit is weakening. This is all connected. Our lives revolve around money. And if you fuck with the money, you fuck with our lives. That's why Bitcoin and hard assets matter so much. Fix the money, fix the world. This is just another reminder that the last 50 years are a blip in monetary history. Infinite fiat currencies are not the norm. The dollar, since 1971, is just an experiment, and it's not going very well. Bitcoin sounds crazy to most people, but is actually just a return to hard money principles we've had throughout history. The question I keep asking myself is, why do they do it? Printing money clearly destroys currencies over time through inflation. It kills purchasing power and creates devastating inequality. It leaves a crippling debt for our kids in the future. Why? Obviously, war is one answer. But there might be something else. The reality is pretty simple. We are now addicted to it. Once you start printing, it's really hard to stop. It's like a drug. Our entire monetary system is a junkie, desperate for the next hit of money printing. There are three more reasons why we're addicted to the printing press, like a zombie junkie craving another high. 1. The government wants you to spend as much as possible. 2. It makes the $27 trillion debt pile look smaller. And 3. It makes international trade more competitive. Let's take them one at a time. Chapter 17. Choose a fucking big television. Why governments will always devalue your money. Choose a life, choose a job, choose a career, choose a family, choose a fucking big television. Choose washing machines, cars, compact disc players, and electrical tin openers. Choose DSY, and wondering who the fuck you are on a Sunday morning. Choose sitting on that couch watching mind-numbing, spirit-crushing game shows, stuffing junk food into your mouth. If you haven't seen the movie Trainspotting, I recommend you go watch it now, just for this amazing speech in the intro. It's a vicious takedown of consumer culture, credit cards, and eating trash food. I'm exaggerating a bit, but this is the kind of consumer culture the government wants. Spend, spend, spend. Doesn't matter what you're buying. They just want you to get the credit card out. If you want to save money, they actually punish you. Think about it. What's the interest rate on your savings account right now? I looked up the best savings account interest rates I could find in the US at the time of writing. Citi, 0.7% APY. Marcus by Goldman Sachs, 0.6%. Amex, 0.6%. And just to compare, here's a shameless plug for BlockFi and the crypto dollar. GUSD, 8.6% APY. So you're getting 1% at your bank, if you're lucky. But goods and services are rising 2% every year. And it's way more than that if you measure it by asset inflation. If you leave your money in one of these savings accounts, you are losing money every year, in real terms. The math is so painfully obvious, I can't believe there aren't riots in the street about this. So why do they do it? Because they want you to go buy a big fucking television. The government wants you to go out and buy cars and TVs and washing machines and electric tin openers. Anything to keep the economic gears turning. And it's a brilliantly evil psychological trick. Here's how it works. By slashing the interest rate to zero, they discourage saving on purpose. There's no incentive to keep your money at the bank. If you save all your money in a bank account, you're not spending it. I am getting 8.6% APY interest on my cash accounts now by holding GUSD, a digital dollar or stablecoin, at BlockFi. Compounding interest like this is a psychological dopamine hit. Every month you get a ka-ching of new money. You don't want to spend it because you'll miss that monthly dopamine hit. That's gone forever in traditional banking. Some millennials have probably never, ever felt it. They've never been rewarded for saving. At the same time, the Fed is aiming for 2% inflation. Everything around you is getting 2% more expensive every year. And you've got no incentive to keep money in the bank. That triggers something psychological in your brain. You've got to buy it now. If you wait till next year, it's going to be more expensive. And if you can't afford it, better get a credit card or finance it. So the Fed cuts interest rates to get everyone spending and prints money to hit that 2% inflation target. But there's a problem. These central bank tools are only supposed to be used to get us out of a crisis. Back in 2008, after the financial crisis, we were all scared to spend money. We were in a recession. So the Fed did its psychological trick to get us spending again. Low interest rates, money printing, kickstart the economy. Fair enough. But governments got hooked on it, just like the heroin junkies in Trainspotting. They get their own little adrenaline rush as the economy goes back up. So they keep printing. They chase that next hit. They want you to buy a brand new Cadillac on credit. New clothes, expensive watches, fancy restaurants. Put it all on a credit card. Buy it with debt. This is the illusion of wealth. As spending goes up, so does the country's GDP. So does tax revenue, sales tax, VAT, income tax, etc. It also makes the economic data look good. The junky adrenaline rush goes into overdrive, and then it gets political. Presidents with a strong economy always get re-elected. So the president pushes for more spending, more growth. It's a four-year cycle of destruction. Another reason why Bitcoin's halving brilliantly coincides with election year. Savers are punished on purpose. The dollar is devalued on purpose. It's a terrible store of value on purpose because it's designed for spending. Fiat money, therefore, fails the first criteria of good money through history. It's not a store of value. The dollar is a medium of exchange and, admittedly, probably the best one on the planet. It's supercharged for spending and exchanging, but it's absolutely terrible for building wealth for the future. So if you're wondering why the interest rate at your bank is so low, this is why. Absolutely zero incentive to save your money. You might as well spend it instead. Negative interest rates. If you think 1% interest at your bank is bad, you should ask the Germans and Swiss how they feel. Interest rates are currently negative in Europe and Japan. Some customers are paying the bank to hold their money. In Switzerland, the wealthiest depositors pay the bank 0.6% a year if they've got more than 500,000 euros in their account. This is insane. Absolutely insane. It wipes out the incentive to save money, and they do it on purpose. They don't want your money sitting in a bank account doing nothing. They want you to spend to stimulate the economy, to boost that GDP number. It works the other way too. In Denmark, 2016, Hans Peter Christensen checked his mortgage statement one month and found a $38 interest payment from his bank. That must be a mistake, he thought, until he realized the bank's new mortgage rate was minus 0.0562%. In the upside-down world of negative interest rates, Hans' bank was paying him interest for taking out a mortgage. My parents said I should frame it, to prove to coming generations that this ever happened, he joked. The real joke is that future generations will probably never know a world without negative interest rates unless we escape to a Bitcoin system. Low and negative interest rates are also designed to encourage borrowing. They want you to run up the credit card bill, buy that new car on finance, and take out a bigger mortgage. In Denmark, they'll actually pay you to borrow money. Even the banks realize how crazy this is. Jysk Bank in Denmark, which offers negative mortgage rates, has an FAQ section which includes statements like, yes, you read that right. And how is that possible? It's possible because the government wants you to buy things at any cost, even if it means paying you to take out a mortgage. They want you to invest. It's not just spending. A weaker currency is designed to make you invest, to spur the economy. Think about it. If you're only getting 1% at a bank or money market accounts, you're going to look somewhere else for a better return. Maybe you take that riskier loan and invest in some real estate. Maybe you buy some stocks. Maybe you take a big loan and start a business. By the way, none of these things are bad things. I started businesses. I've borrowed money. I hold a lot of real estate. I invest in startups. Investing is good, but it shouldn't be a substitute for saving. We shouldn't have to take this much risk just to save money. We go to work every day. We spend 40 plus hours away from our family every week. We grind it out and save some money. That should be enough. Now, everyone is forced to come home from their jobs and be an amateur stock analyst just to get ahead. You can't just keep some dollars in the bank. You've got to beat that 2% inflation. So you're checking Robinhood on the weekends and after work. Crazy. And if you don't? Well, your dollars are going to sit in the bank account and lose purchasing power. You're punished for saving. This is why stocks can go to record highs even during a crisis like 2020. People aren't buying stocks because they think the economy is booming. They're buying stocks because they haven't got any other choice. They can't generate any interest on their dollars, so they turn to riskier investments. Again, this is what the government wants. They punish you for holding cash on purpose, so you invest it in companies, real estate, etc. And just a reminder that this is all political. If the stock market goes up, the president gets re-elected. This is happening in every developed nation on the planet. A global competition for economic dominance. They're flexing their GDP and powering it all by money printing. But there's an even scarier reason for the money printer. and it's the reason I know they'll never turn the money printer off again. The $27 billion pile of debt. Chapter 18. The $27 trillion problem no one is talking about. $27 trillion. That's the US debt, as I type these words. The biggest debt of any country on the planet. It's up more than $4 trillion this year alone. And by the time you've finished reading this chapter, the US debt will have gone up another $15 million. This is a problem. US debt is now running higher than GDP. Translation, we're spending more money than we're making. Every household knows this is a disaster waiting to happen. What happens if you spend more money than you make? What happens if you keep loading up the credit card? You blow up your finances. I've literally pulled myself up from the gutter to get where I am. The first rule I live by is don't spend more than you make. It's just plain simple. You don't do it. It's easy to ignore this big debt figure. But think of it like this. If you live in America right now, your share of that debt is $82,000. How would you feel if you had $82,000 on your credit card? By the way, that's every person in America, not just taxpayers. Every baby is born with $82,000 debt. If you're a working taxpayer, that figure is over $200,000 each. The interest payments alone are terrifying. $340 billion a year and rising. It's the fourth largest item on the budget, right after military spending. Don't pretend like this doesn't exist. When you pay your bill at the end of the year, you're paying for this. America isn't any different from a family household or a company. You can't run a country like this forever. Some people will tell you that we owe that debt to ourselves, so you don't have to repay it. Bullshit. Two of the biggest holders of US debt are Japan and China. If they start worrying about our ability to pay that back, they could start selling, and that would send a ripple effect through the whole system, or they demand more interest for their risk. But it's worse than that. Guess where else we borrow money from? Social Security. Every single president has dipped into America's retirement fund to borrow more money. Just imagine doing this at a household level. Imagine taking money out of your retirement fund just to keep going. It's a last resort. That money has to go back in the pot, or we can't pay people's retirement. Don't get it twisted. We have to pay back the debt, or at least stay above water and prove we're good for the money. Look, I don't mind debt. Debt can be a good way to drive growth. It's how I built my business. But borrowing more money than you make is insanity. It's got to be manageable. We're running at 128% debt to GDP as I write this. Historically, anything over 77% slows down growth according to the World Bank, and anything over 130% is game over. In the last 200 years, 51 out of 52 countries defaulted when they went over 130%. Either a hard default or a massive currency devaluation. We are right on the cliff edge. Macro investor Lynn Alden compares it to the Titanic. It's like the Titanic hitting an iceberg. Once struck, the outcome of sinking became almost inevitable, and yet the ship persisted in a state of being afloat and slowly sinking for quite a while. It became a question of timing, and most importantly, acquiring lifeboats. Bitcoin is the lifeboat this time around. Why? Because think about how this plays out. When the debt is this high, there are only three options. 1. Raise taxes. Tax revenue is the only thing that physically pays down the debt. We'll have to tax the next generation into oblivion just to pay the interest. 2. Cut spending. We go into what's called austerity measures. Cut unemployment benefits, delay retirement age, cut wages for federal employees. Tighten the belt, basically. 3. Default. If it goes on too long, people stop trusting the US economy. They stop lending us money. We can't service the debt and we default. Complete economic destruction. Think of it like your family finances. If you're in over your head, what are your options? Make more money, stop spending, or go bankrupt. But there's a problem with these options at government level. They're incredibly unpopular. No president can get elected on a manifesto of taxing people into oblivion. No one can get elected by promising to slash retirement benefits. And no president will ever let the country default under their watch. It would be the worst legacy in US history. So what can they do? Print more money. You never have to default because you print the money. Donald Trump. America has a fourth option up its sleeve. The money printer. By increasing the money supply, we can effectively make the debt disappear. Well, at least appear smaller. Again, think of it like your family finances. Let's say Harold has $50,000 of credit card debt. But his net worth is only $40,000. He's underwater. The interest is unmanageable. Harold is living month to month in a black cloud of debt. But what if Harold could draw some more money? What if he could double the money supply, just like America has in the last couple of years? Harold draws thousands of dollar bills. Now he's got an $8,000 net worth, but his credit card is still the same. Like magic, now he can pay back the interest and breathe again. It's still the same amount of debt, but it's easier to manage. This is exactly what's happening in the US. And this is the real reason why the money printer is never going off. We have to keep printing money and lowering interest rates to dilute the debt. If we don't, we'll default. And they can never let that happen. Every single major economy is playing this game of devaluing the debt and debasing your money at the same time. But make no mistake, we will pay for this through currency devaluation in the future. Printing money debases the dollar. It's just kicking the can down the road. And it will go on forever because no president will grab this problem by the balls and take action. With debt now running over 100%, Americans will start to take notice. They'll run to hard money and assets. And the rabbit hole only leads to one place, Bitcoin. And just a reminder, the debt went up $15 million while you read this chapter. Chapter 19. Currency wars led to real wars. To sum it up, the government wants a weaker currency. It's in their interest. I'm not exaggerating about this. Donald Trump said it himself back in 2019. As your president, one would think that I would be thrilled with our very strong dollar. I am not. Trump was so desperate for a weaker dollar, he reportedly asked his aides to look into new ways to artificially lower its value relative to other currencies. I'm not trying to make a political statement about the Trump administration here. Every president wants a weaker currency. Democrat presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren also said we should actively manage the dollar during her 2020 campaign. This is happening on all sides of the political spectrum and in every major economy around the world. It's funny. Before Trump was elected, all of this international money fuckery happened quietly behind closed doors. But Trump blew the doors off and showed everyone what was really happening. In July 2019, he went on Twitter and called out China and Europe for deliberately weakening their currency. China and Europe playing big currency manipulation game and pumping money into their system in order to compete with the USA. Then he publicly called for America to do the same. We should match or continue being dummies who sit back and politely watch as other countries continue to play their games, as they have for many years. In this one tweet, Trump revealed how fiat currencies work. Every major economy on the planet purposely devalues its currency to stay competitive. Competitive currency weakening explained with Lamborghinis. Imagine Lamborghini needs to import some engine parts for the new Aventador. They're looking around the world to find the best place to buy. If the euro is weak, German exports are cheaper. So Lamborghini goes shopping in Germany. But now China wants a piece of the action, so they start weakening the yuan. Now China's exports look even cheaper than Germany's. Maybe Lamborghini starts importing engine parts from China instead. Now the US gets angry. They want to supply Lamborghini too, so they devalue the dollar to compete. Japan does the same. Then Britain. You see how this goes on? It's a race to the bottom. Weakest currency wins. Economists call this a beggar-thy-neighbor policy. Nations make economic decisions that actively hurt their neighbors because it's in their national interest. Problem is, you quickly run out of ways to weaken the currency. So you get more and more bizarre policies like quantitative easing, like negative interest rates in Japan and Europe. We're now balancing a very, very dangerous tightrope. Every major economy is carefully trying to lower their currency enough to stay competitive, but not so much that they trigger runaway inflation and spiral out of control. At some point, one of the nations will go too far. The euro, the dollar, the yen, the yuan, I don't know. One of them will push too hard and trigger uncontrollable inflation. This has been going on for years. Every president since Nixon came off the gold standard has tried to weaken the dollar, but I don't think any of them have been as bold in public as Trump. Just take a second to let this wash over you for a minute. This is the President of the United States declaring on Twitter to 80 million followers that we should debase our own currency. It's no surprise that all the top replies to his currency tweets are from Bitcoiners. Under one of the tweets, Ikigai fund manager Travis Kling said, "Goodness gracious, this is mind-numbingly bullish Bitcoin." He's right. The president is telling you loud and clear that he will dilute your savings. Smart investors are now looking around for assets that will hold value. Why would they hold on to dollars when they know for certain the dollar will lose value? The first place they look is gold. The perfect hedge for an asset with infinite supply is one with a scarce supply. Ditch dollars, buy gold. Maybe some real estate. Some will buy stocks. Assets that appreciate in value relative to the dollar. But as we've explained, these aren't really store of value assets. They are business risk or investing assets. But now we have Bitcoin. It couldn't be a better setup. The dollar has infinite supply, and the US government has told us loud and clear the supply will increase exponentially. By the way, just as this book was going to press, Joe Biden won the 2020 US election. Just to be clear, none of this changes under Biden or any other president. Trump and Obama both added trillions and trillions of dollars to the deficit. Both printed obscene amounts of money during their time in office. Biden will be no different. Red or blue, it doesn't matter. The value of the dollar will go down over time, as certain as gravity. Bitcoin is the escape hatch. Unlike the dollar, Bitcoin has a hard, fixed supply, and its daily outflow will gradually decrease over time. It's mathematically designed to hold its value. I can't guarantee that Bitcoin will go up, but I can guarantee the dollar will go down. It's the perfect hedge, the perfect alternative. I like the way Pierre Rochard puts it. Bitcoin is savings technology. It's not a business or a stock. It's not a bond. You're not lending any money to anyone. It's not a commodity. It isn't used in industry. It's simply a form of saving, with an asset that's mathematically designed to hold and accrue value. We work hard for our money, grinding ourselves to the bone for most of our lives. Saving money should be enough. You shouldn't have to take on business risk with stocks or other investments just to keep up with inflation. There should be a thing that saves your money behind the strongest computing network of all time, and makes sure its value keeps up with inflation. That thing is Bitcoin. When you fuck with the money, it can lead to war. We are in a currency war. We can pretend like we're not, but Trump admitted it. Every major country is racing to devalue their money so they can compete globally. And they're competing for trade. But when one country can no longer compete, a currency war turns into a trade war. We saw this play out in 2019 through 2020 as Trump declared a trade war with China. When a country, USA, is losing many billions of dollars on trade with virtually every country it does business with, trade wars are good and easy to win. Example, when we are down $100 billion with a certain country and they get cute, don't trade anymore. We win big. It's easy. And trade wars can quickly turn into real wars. There's a famous quote from French economist Frédéric Bastiat. When goods do not cross frontiers, armies will. World War II was triggered partly because of a currency war that went too far. It started in Weimar, Germany, as they devalued the Deutsche Mark. France, Britain, and America all devalued their currencies to stay competitive. Then came the trade war. US President Herbert Hoover slammed huge tariffs on foreign imports. Others followed. All of a sudden, we saw a wave of nationalism and populism that led to World War II. It's simple. When you fuck with the money, it can lead to war. This can never happen with Bitcoin. The common denominator in all this money fuckery is people. Politicians and central bankers who are greedy and power hungry. They weaken the currency for their own power games. And we never know what's going to happen next. We are constantly guessing about future monetary policy. I'm not saying Bitcoin would stop wars. Or maybe I am. Wars are financed on printed money. If you can't inflate the money supply, it's much harder to start a war in the first place. And if the world ran on Bitcoin, no one could weaken the currency for their own trade agenda. There'd be no currency war, no trade war, and a much lower chance of all-out violent warfare. The beautiful, predictable Bitcoin policy. The most comforting thing about Bitcoin is that it's completely predictable and self-regulating. It's not just the 21 million hard cap. It's the steady supply schedule, 6.25 BTC every 10 minutes, no matter what. Every 4 years, it gets cut in half. That's it. Block by block, tick-tock, tick-tock. No one can fuck with it for their own power games. And it's completely free from human emotions. No matter what chaos is going on in the world, the Bitcoin supply schedule will never change. It takes the human element out of money supply decisions. We know humans are irrational and emotional. Humans make decisions based on fear and greed. They compete with rivals. They go to war. But with Bitcoin, the algorithm rules. You can't increase the supply during times of fear. You can't tighten supply in times of greed. It's steady and predictable. Deal with it. And it's completely neutral and impartial. Bitcoin doesn't care about your trade war with China. Bitcoin doesn't care about your export policy or your re-election campaign. It doesn't care if you're Republican or Democrat. It's an independent financial rail open to everyone. It's just fair. Again, this is brand new. No asset like this has ever existed. Bitcoin is the most transparent, predictable, reliable form of money that has ever existed. Nick Carter put it best when he said Bitcoin removes monetary arbitrariness. Almost every other form of money on the planet right now suffers from monetary arbitrariness. Governments and central banks have complete control over the supply. And they wield that power to print money based on their arbitrary personal or political agenda. Monetary arbitrariness allows elites to plunder a torrent of new issuance for their own gain. It happens time and time again through history. When a person or small group has control over the money supply, they almost always use that power to help themselves. It's happened since 1971. It happened in 2008. And it happened again in 2020. And guess who gets screwed over? Anyone trying to save a few dollars. Our current money system is cruel. This is why Bitcoin matters. Bitcoin takes the greed out of monetary policy. It takes away the arbitrary decisions of humans. Robotic, predictable, hard money you can't fuck with. Bitcoin is money. We've been on a journey. The history of money is long and dense, but I think we proved a few things. 1. The best money evolves naturally. All the hardest forms of money grew naturally, without government interference. Shells, barley, gold, ramen, etc. They started out as collectibles and grew into mainstream use based on pure market demand. Bitcoin also emerged naturally and grew according to market demand. It wasn't introduced by a government or forced on anyone. It had an immaculate conception. It was collected by early cryptographers, and the market slowly gave it more value over time. 2. Good money begins as a store of value. All the strongest monies through time, like gold, started out as a store of value. We accumulated and hoarded items so that we might exchange them in the future. This is where Bitcoin is right now, the game of accumulation. We hold it as a store of value, anticipating that it might be worth more in the future, and that it will eventually evolve into a medium of exchange. 3. Good money has a natural scarcity. All forms of good money through history had an element of rarity or scarcity that gave them an intrinsic value. We know that Bitcoin is the most provably scarce asset ever created. 4. Good money evolves slowly into a medium of exchange. When enough people have hoarded their store of value monies, they start to exchange them naturally. The price stabilizes, and it becomes an efficient form of day-to-day money. Bitcoin isn't at this point yet, but it will come with time. As Bitcoin's adoption grows, its price fluctuations will stabilize, and more people will use it to pay for goods and services. 5. Government fiat money will always be devalued over time. The infinite money printer is just too tempting for governments to ignore, especially in times of war or greed. The constant battle to compete on the global stage means central banks will always manipulate the currency lower in their favor. And if you're holding dollars, you'll keep getting screwed. Bitcoin is completely immune to this. Its supply is hard-coded at 21 million. Its output schedule is decided centuries into the future. It cannot be manipulated by governments, central banks, or anyone else. It cannot be artificially devalued. 6. Global reserve currencies don't last forever. Every dominant global currency has eventually been replaced. Cattle, barley, shells, gold, the Dutch florin, the British pound. The world shifts. Nations lose their power. Currencies lose their dominance, especially when they lose their scarcity. The dollar is coming to the end of its dominance. I believe Bitcoin is poised to fill the gap. So, no, Bitcoin isn't just magical internet money. It has all the qualities of a good money throughout history. Actually, it's better. It's the hardest, most advanced form of money ever created. And it's fully digital. The next question is, how do we go from this point in time to Bitcoin becoming the next global reserve currency? Well, 2020 was the trigger point. Chapter 20. Hell is coming. The 2020 crisis. It was like 2008 all over again. The bankers spilled out onto Wall Street with their cardboard boxes and disheveled ties. Another fresh batch of unemployed suits. Deutsche Bank just announced 18,000 layoffs, and one picture captured the whole thing perfectly. Among the chaos, a man in a suit left the Deutsche Bank headquarters, holding a bag that read Bitcoins. Twitter exploded. A former banker kicked onto the street, leaving the office with a Bitcoin bag. It was too perfect. The collapse of one financial system and the start of a new one. What a protest. It turns out it was all a coincidence. The man wasn't a fired banker, but a tailor who was visiting the Deutsche Bank managers that day. By the way, let's not skip over the irony of bank managers getting fitted for fresh suits on the same day they announced 18,000 layoffs. Still, the image defined everything that was about to happen. The picture was taken back in July 2019, months before the crash happened. But it was an eerie premonition. Something was wrong at the banks. These mass layoffs on Wall Street were a big clue about how precarious the whole system was. I wish I could tell you I saw the 2020 crisis coming. Like anyone who buys Bitcoin, I knew something was wrong with the financial system. The mountain of debt, the money printing, the currency wars, the greed. None of it is sustainable. But I can't predict the timing of these things. No one can. And don't believe these doomsday guys like Peter Schiff, who are always yelling about a stock market collapse and recessions. They've been saying the same thing for 10 years. Of course, they're right eventually. How much money did they miss sitting on the sidelines? No one could have predicted the way this played out. No one. I couldn't have imagined what was about to come next. Hell is coming. I was in Peru for my birthday in early 2020, joking around and surfing when we started to hear news stories about a new virus in China. The coronavirus. The entire city of Wuhan was locked down, and there was a hotspot growing in Italy. But I had no clue about the scope of this thing. We were laughing and joking, making TikToks on the beach. Then my phone started blowing up. The virus was spreading to New York. And then the stock market blew up. On March 9th, the Dow fell so much it triggered the circuit breakers. The biggest intraday fall in history. Trading was halted. Pure panic. A couple of days later, the same thing. President Trump banned all travel from Europe. Stocks crashed straight into the circuit breakers within 15 minutes of the market opening. It was happening. The financial system was collapsing in front of us. It was like the final scene of Fight Club, where the skyscrapers come falling down. I kept thinking, what happens to Bitcoin in this situation? I checked my account. The BTC price was falling too, but I just kept buying more. When the financial system is crumbling, get into the lifeboat. Time to escape. Things started to get serious at the airport on the way home. President Trump declared a national emergency, and Peru was about to go into lockdown. We were almost trapped there. Got out with a day to spare. And we landed back home to complete chaos. New York was about to go into a full lockdown. The financial capital of the world went silent. Times Square was empty. Back home in North Carolina, I watched it all play out in shock. Billionaire investor Bill Ackman was on CNBC warning that hell is coming as the stock market staged its fastest crash in history. It was a bloodbath, and it kept getting worse. 10 million people lost their jobs in those first few weeks. Businesses that had survived decades were forced to close their doors to protect from the virus. I was getting calls from my tenants. We can't pay the rent this month. And we had to shut the energy plant down. The whole thing was heartbreaking. They couldn't let it crash. The panic on the face of Jerome Powell was obvious. The chair of the Federal Reserve knew exactly what this meant. There's too much debt in the system. If the markets keep falling, the banks would seize up. There'd be another financial crisis, 10 times worse than the last one. They did the only thing they could. Money printer go brrr. Powell slashed interest rates down to zero and flooded the system with money. $1.5 trillion in short-term loans. A $500 billion asset purchase in one afternoon. Another $1 trillion in commercial paper lending. By the end of March, the Fed had pumped $4 trillion of new liquidity into the banking system. It didn't work. The markets kept falling and the banks were seizing up again. Problem is, we're addicted, remember? The economy is a junkie, addicted to printed money and cheap debt. We've been feasting on fake money since the last crisis. And just like a junkie, the market needed more and more drugs to get high. Back in 2008, it took $3.5 trillion over 6 years to save the economy. In 2020, they blew that much in a month, and it still didn't work. In April, Powell threw another $2.3 trillion at the markets. The Fed wasn't buying everything. Treasury bonds, mortgage-backed securities, ETFs, junk bonds, anything to keep the money flowing. Then they did something they'd never done before. One morning, when traders woke up to another bloodbath on the markets, Powell came out again. This time, he promised to buy assets indefinitely, with no limit until the crisis was over. In other words, QE infinity. Just think about what that means. The Federal Reserve basically promised to prop the markets up forever. The money printer was on autopilot. It's bigger than America too. Remember, the dollar is the world's reserve currency. Everyone wanted dollars during this crisis. Every nation, every investor, every company. Just get safely into cash and ride it out. The Fed wasn't just printing to keep America going. It was printing for the whole world. They had swap lines with almost every central bank on the globe, pumping dollars through the world's financial plumbing pipes, flowing like water. The Fed printed more US dollars in those 2 months than it did in the first 2 centuries of America's existence. Seriously, more money printing in a few weeks than almost 240 years. The balance sheet swelled to almost $7 trillion. And finally, it started to work. Banks began lending again. Stocks began to recover. The crisis was over. 26 million unemployed. But that's not how it felt to most people on the street. Daniel Victory is a 42-year-old bar owner who lost all his business overnight. The outbreak totally shut me down. I just don't see how we'll be able to recover. I have two kids, so it's difficult. I haven't had a paycheck in a month and a half. Stanley Chen is a car mechanic who's worked for 30 years. This is the first time in my life in America that I've had no job. We don't really have enough money right now. Karen Switzer is a small business owner and a single mum, desperately trying to keep enough money coming in. I applied for unemployment a couple times, and I still haven't gotten any money. I've gotten a debit card, but I've been approved for $0. Most people in America were hurting. None of that $7 trillion Burbucks trickled down to them. In the coming months, tens of millions of Americans lost their jobs. Some of them got fired twice as we tried to reopen the economy and then close down again. We were on the verge of an insolvency crisis. Thousands of mom-and-pop businesses were about to go bankrupt. Those Burbucks stopped the banks from going under, but it didn't put food on the table for the average person. In fact, all it did was make inequality worse. If you're a wealthy guy with most of your money in assets, the Fed literally just pumped them back up for you. Job done. If you're in the middle class, maybe you held on to your job, worked at home for a few months on Zoom. Your 401k took a hit when stocks fell, but it quickly recovered thanks to the money printing. Maybe you even saved some extra cash by not going out to restaurants and bars. Tough, but you got through it. But what about our man in the Bronx working two jobs, struggling to pay his mum's healthcare costs? His little girl still wants to go to NYU one day. He got fired. Twice. The employment checks kept him going for a while, but eventually he wiped out his savings to feed his family. The Fed was adamant that inflation was in check, but food costs went up 4.6% in 2020, the biggest rise in a decade. Medical care up 5%, rent up 3%. All the things he needed right now got more expensive. And even if he could get a job, wages got absolutely crushed. Low-wage workers saw their salaries fall 16% in 2020. High-wage salaries stayed flat. You could feel the inequality widening. There was tension in America like I've never felt before. Riots in the streets. Anger, fear, resentment. It was like a pressure cooker about to explode. The Federal Reserve knew what was happening. Their Burbucks had saved the financial system. The banks were okay. Assets were up again. But it wasn't trickling down to people that need it. The next threat was insolvency. When people lose jobs, they stop paying their rent. They default on the mortgage. Forget about car payments. Not going to happen. Small businesses make it work for as long as possible. But eventually they'll bleed out and shut down. This is the Jenga Tower, falling one by one. The money doesn't trickle down, but defaults do trickle up. We saw that in 2008. When people stop paying their mortgages, the whole thing eventually comes down. The Fed was panicking. They did everything they could for the banks, but they couldn't force their Burbucks down to the people. It was all getting stuck in the banks and stocks. On top of all that, people were angry. Riots in the streets. People needed help, or there was going to be a full-on revolution. So the government did something it had never done before. Helicopter money. We're going to send checks to Americans immediately. The president has instructed me. We have to do this now. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. They cut a $1,200 check to almost every adult in the country and $500 to every child. Congress passed a $2 trillion stimulus package to help individuals, small businesses, and the airlines. Helicopter money arrived in America. Helicopter money means giving the public free cash to keep the economy going, like dollar bills falling from a helicopter. The term was coined by economist Milton Friedman. But it was money printer Ben Bernanke who made it famous. He put it on the table as a last resort option in 2002. Giving him the nickname Helicopter Ben. It seemed laughable at the time. Now here we are, and no one's laughing. People needed help. Daniel Victory and Stanley Chan and Karen Switzer needed money to feed their kids. My tenants and employees needed a lifeline. I don't think anybody with a heart has a problem with helping these people. But here's why it's scary. How do we pay for it? We print the damn money. Paul McCulley, former chief economist at PIMCO. All this money has to come from somewhere. And if you're still reading this, you already know the answer. They created it out of thin air. The government doesn't have trillions of dollars lying around in tax receipts. We're already $27 trillion in debt. So they create it from nothing. Here's exactly how it works. 1. Congress passes the $2 trillion stimulus law. 2. The Treasury then issues bonds to fund the spending. 3. If investors and other nations don't buy enough of the bonds, the Federal Reserve steps in. 4. The Federal Reserve presses a button to increase the money supply. 5. The Federal Reserve buys the bonds. 6. That's it. Technically, we haven't paid a real dollar to fund the stimulus out of our own pockets. We didn't raise taxes, but we'll sure as hell pay for it later. This is the drug hit, a short-term high, and trust me, there will be a soul-destroying comedown. We are all going to pay for this in the future, with higher inflation, bigger inequality, and probably higher taxes. Remember, there are only three ways the debt goes away: inflation, higher taxes, or a default. This is a freaking scary situation. We already know how much this process devalues the dollar. Method Man's dollar-dollar bill lost 50% of its value in 30 years. Now they just printed more money in 2 months than almost 250 years. What happens to the value of your money next?